Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, the more polls come out since last week's debate, the more there appears to be a Romney bounce. The Pew poll released yesterday, for example, as you just heard there on the news, showed a slight Romney lead among likely voters. That's a change, and I note it because that came out since our segment yesterday, where the results were a little more doubtful. The bounce may or may not last, time will tell, but that debate was about domestic policy, especially the economy, which has been the voters' main concern this year, of course. Yesterday, Romney gave what he billed as a major foreign policy address. So can foreign policy also matter in this campaign? Fred Kaplan, who writes the War Stories military column for Slate, is here to break down what Romney said in the speech. Turns out there may be more that contradicts Romney's previous positions than Obama's current ones. Hi, Fred. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Let's jump right in on a simple six-second statement that Romney made about the Middle East.
It's clear that the risk of conflict in the region is higher now than when the president took office.
So is he saying that Obama has made the Middle East a more dangerous place?
I think that's what he's saying. The risk of conflict is higher. The actuality of conflict is lower. I mean, there was a full-blown war going on in Iraq when President Obama took office. Iran has supposedly been close to a nuclear weapon since, that was an issue in the Bush-Kerry campaign. So Iran isn't doing anything more dangerous than there was. There were more violent incidents in Israel and the territories than there are now. Again, I'm not saying that Obama is necessarily responsible for those trends either, but it's, everything that's going on in the world that's bad is Obama's fault, and everything that's going on that's good is the result of our great professional soldiers and intelligence officers.
Everywhere,
in the whole world, according to Romney.
And listeners, what do you want from foreign policy, from the next president, whoever it is? Did you pay attention to this speech yesterday? 212-433-WNYC, whether you did or didn't, 212-433-9692. Staying in that region, here's how Romney addressed Libya, a 13-second excerpt.
I'll support the Libyan people's efforts to forge a lasting government that represents all of them, and I'll vigorously pursue the terrorists who attacked our consulate in Benghazi and killed our fellow Americans.
Now, where have I heard that before? President Obama, maybe?
Well, not only that, but I believe that at least some of the people who attacked the consulate are in custody in Turkey right now. So a President Romney would have little to pursue. Basically, you can divide this speech into two or three categories. One, things that that Romney said he will do that are already being done. Two, things that Romney said he will do that are either vague or not a very good idea. And three, things where Romney really doesn't say he might, the criticism of Obama might have some validity, but he comes up with no real ideas about how he would handle things better.
So I take it you love this speech.
Yeah, it was grist for my mill. As a columnist, I loved the speech.
As a columnist,
as a citizen, I'm less than enthralled.
On the Libya question, though, I mean, Romney has stumbled on Libya before, jumping in after the incident there, saying things that he came to regret. But it is a failure of the Obama administration that the security was lax enough to let that happen, correct?
You could say that, yeah. I think that's legitimate. He portrays this as an example of a pervasive trend throughout the world. He talks about mobs attacking embassies everywhere, flag burnings, American citizens fleeing to safety. And in fact, if you look at numbers put out by the State Department, both in the Bush administration and the Obama administration, the numbers of these kinds of incidents is way, way down compared with what it has been throughout, say from the 1950s on. these are very rare incidents, which, again, is not to let Obama off the hook for what happened in Libya. But then the very weird thing is that Romney went on to say, when he was talking about Libya, that, you know, there's signs of hope. You know, tens of thousands of people took to the streets to protest against the militants and to speak out in favor of the American ambassador. Well, I mean, why is that? It's because President Obama supported the Libyan rebels in their fight against Gaddafi. This American ambassador wasn't exactly an independent agent. He was an appointee of the Obama administration. So the hopeful sign that Romney is pointing to is a direct result of Obama administration policy in Libya. So
Which brings us to Syria, on mm-hmm. which there is a real difference, I think, on which Romney was calling yesterday for more aid to the rebels, something John McCain has talked about a lot, wanting to arm the Syrian rebels rather than do nothing or just talk about the wrongness of the Assad government, which Romney and McCain say that Obama is doing. This is a real difference, right? Wanting to send arms to the rebels?
Yes and no. But if you look at his I'm looking at his speech right now. He says, I will work with our partners to identify and organize those members of the opposition and ensure they obtain the arms they need. Now, where are they going to obtain them? He didn't say, I will provide them with arms. I will help them obtain the arms. So even he isn't saying that he's actually going to provide them. The concern that the Obama administration has, and I have mixed feelings about this. The feeling is, look, if we start giving these weapons, heavy weapons to them, they're going to fall into the hands of jihadists, just like they did when we gave weapons to the Afghan rebels to fight off the Soviet Union. And in the meantime, things are very fluid, and we don't know where these arms are going. So that's why Romney says we will work with our partners to identify and organize those members of the opposition who share our values. Well, you know, I don't know if any of them share our values. But, you know, I think we could be doing more than we are, but we're working with our partners, as he says, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, other countries in the region which have far greater and more intimate interests than we do in getting something done. But they're not doing anything anyway for some of these same reasons of ambivalence.
And that's an interesting framing anyway, supporting the Syrian rebels who share our values. Do we not support the Syrian rebels because they're fighting for freedom against Assad? Is that not enough? They also have to be tested for whether they share our values. And that's a conflict. You don't want to give our tax dollars to people who may turn out to be enemies of the United States if they get into power. On the other hand, there's another value there, which is self-determination for its own sake. So here is Romney making a more general statement, because I heard a lot of this speech as being framed in terms of strength versus weakness. You'll tell me if you disagree. But here he's saying current foreign policy is inconsistent and confusing and therefore weak.
No friend of America will question our commitment to support them. No enemy that attacks America will question our resolve to defeat them. And no one anywhere, friend or foe, will doubt America's capability to back up our words.
So, valid criticism. I feel like that goes back to Bush. No enemy that attacks America will question our resolve to defeat them. And no one anywhere, friend or foe, will doubt America's capability to back up our words.
Mm-hmm.
Does that address Afghanistan, where Romney has been critical that Obama has announced a timetable for withdrawal?
Well, it does in part, but, you know, it's funny. In the speech yesterday, he said that, I'm against these political timetables. And then he says, I will pursue a real and successful transition to Afghan security forces by the end of 2014, which is a timetable. And it's Obama's policy. It's NATO policy. It's the policy that President Karzai of Afghanistan has demanded. So on other things.
Well, actually, can I stop you there? Because
sure.
That sounds like news to me. If Romney stood up there and used those words
mm-hmm.
and said that he would, and I don't have this particular piece of the transcript in front of me, so you tell me how much this gets at it. So maybe you want to read it again and say, did Romney basically announce, I will follow the Obama-NATO timetable for withdrawal of American troops, most of them by 2014?
Well, he says that he'll look at the conditions on the ground and, you know, pay attention to what his commanders say.
But Obama says that too, doesn't he?
Yeah, of course he does. He said, really, one sentence after the next, that he'll pursue a real and successful transition by the end of 2014. And then he denounced Obama's, quote, politically timed retreat that abandons the Afghan people to the same extremists who ravaged their country. So, you know, this is a real speech by committee or something. It's another one of these instances where you can pick whichever soundbite you want, but putting the two together, kind of they negate each other. It's unclear what he's talking about. This whole rhetoric about no one will doubt our commitment. I mean, in terms of U.S. vital interests, I'm not sure who really doubts our commitment right now. I mean, we're talking about a president who, you know, like it or not, has quintupled the number of drone strikes against terrorist targets, you know, throughout South Asia and you know, the area in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, elsewhere. You're talking about a guy who sent Navy SEALs across the border to I don't need to repeat the litany. You know it as well
right.
as I
Although
do.
There are other examples. I think I have a caller here. Oh, we just hung up. Robert in Flushing, where did you go? I think Robert in Flushing was going to say, give an example of an ally that the United States is letting down, and that was going to be Poland with respect to Obama's position on missile defense and Russia.
Well, it is true. It's partly true. Bush had a plan to put missile defenses in Poland. There was some concern that this would look like it was a defense against Soviet missiles, and a rather inadequate one at that. Obama changed the plan. The radars are going to still be in the Czech Republic, and I believe in Poland, but the missiles themselves are going to be out to sea, where, in fact, they'll be less vulnerable to an attack. So the actual effect of the missile defense under the Obama plan, assuming that these things work to begin with, would actually be enhanced compared with the Bush plan.
Let's go to another clip, because Egypt illustrates some of the complications of the Arab Spring for American foreign policy, obviously. An Islamist president elected with the support of the people who suffered at the hands of a former ally. Here's Romney talking about Egypt, 13 seconds.
I'll use our influence, including clear conditions on our aid, to urge the new government to represent all Egyptians, to build democratic institutions, and to maintain its peace treaty with Israel.
Is that different from what Obama is doing now?
Not really. I mean, there has always been at least an implicit condition between USAID to Egypt and Egyptian upholding of the peace treaty with Israel. I cannot imagine. I mean, it's not, you know, engraved in the treaty, but if Egypt called off the peace treaty with Israel, I can't imagine that either Obama or the Congress would keep sending billions of dollars to Egypt. Also, it's very interesting. You know, he mentions at the start of the speech the turmoil in the Middle East with the assault on the Cairo embassy and the Libyan facility as well. You know, this thing died down in a couple of days, and one reason it died down was because Obama got on the phone with President Morsi of Egypt. Had reportedly a very long conversation with him in which he basically said, look, you have to pick a side here. You can either go along with these hooligans or you can, I'm paraphrasing, or join the civilized world. And Morsi came down hard on the militants who attacked the embassy, and that was the end of it. I mean, this was a president showing exactly the kind of leadership that Romney is saying he doesn't display.
There is a faction in the Congress that says that the U.S. should consider right now withdrawing a debt cancellation. There was going to be a cancellation of some Egyptian debt.
Right.
And because Morsi wasn't strong enough, quickly enough, on stopping the violent protests at the U.S. Embassy, Some people say that he should be punished, and some people say that if he's a Muslim Brotherhood president, then we shouldn't be, you know, letting him forego his debts to the United States, that kind of thing. Do you get the sense that Romney would resist that faction of the Republican Party from the speech yesterday or from anything else?
From anything else, I think he probably would, in that I assume that whatever their political views, the people that he would have advising him on foreign policy are at least professional analysts, and I can't imagine a professional analyst going that far. You know, here's the thing, and here's a fallacy of this entire speech. He seems to have this assumption that if only a strong man enters the White House, and if only we tell people that we're going to do this and we're going to do that, that the world changes. You know, there's this real nostalgia for the Cold War era, when the world really was sort of divided into two parts and we controlled a good deal of half of it. And when people didn't like what we were doing, they often succumbed to it anyway because they looked out across the horizon, saw the Russian bear, and didn't want to embrace, you know, the alternative. The world is now so fractured, power is so dispersed, power centers have evaporated. It's very hard for any country, including the United States, to really impose its will, to exert unchallenged influence. It's just a much different world, and I think one precondition of a real leader in these times is first to recognize the limits of one's power and to work within the world as one finds it. There's one of his favorite phrases, we want to shape history, not be shaped by it. Well, you know, that only goes so far. You can shape history to a point, but if you think you can do it beyond that point, there are mental institutions where you can go for that sort of condition.
Fred Kaplan, the War Stories columnist from Slate, with his take on Romney's foreign policy speech yesterday. We're almost out of time, and I want to get to a couple of other things real quick. One last Middle East thought. Israel-Palestine. Mm. People will remember that same video at the Boca fundraiser that included the 47% reference referred to the impossibility, as Romney saw it, of a two-state solution and peace in the Middle East. I want to play 12 seconds. And remember, folks, that video did not have very good sound quality, so listen carefully. We're going to contrast what Romney said to that group of fundraisers on a two-state solution to what he said publicly yesterday. First, here is that secret video earlier in the year.
And I look at the Palestinians not wanting to see peace anyway for political purposes, committed to the destruction and elimination of Israel and these thorny issues, and I say there's just no way.
And I say there's just no way. So yesterday he said this.
Finally, I'll recommit America to the goal of a democratic, prosperous Palestinian state living side by side in peace and security with the Jewish state of Israel.
All right. Which Mitt is which?
Well, again, it doesn't much matter because look, Romney seems to want to do whatever whoever is president of Israel wants to do. That's the answer. And he doesn't take any stance that differs even one iota from Netanyahu, even though there are plenty of people within the Israeli government, including the defense minister, who disagree severely with Netanyahu. So I think we can take the private lunch speech to be the operative one.
Did he mention China? He's been very tough on China.
Well, he talked about among the people who are wondering where is America, he mentioned the rise of China aggressiveness in the Pacific, which is a strange example because that is one area where Obama has done quite a lot to shore up confidence in the United States. He's reached new defense arrangements with Japan. He's got Marines in Australia. They're doing joint naval patrols near the South China Sea with the Philippines today. That is one area where, in fact, some countries in Asia had wanted to move away from the United States. And after China started doing challenging moves, claiming territory in the South China Sea, they re-embraced the United States. And Obama responded with great strength, while at the same time keeping lines open to China, keeping cordial relations. I mean, you know,
and,
hedging, essentially.
In 30 seconds, did he mention Latin America at all?
He said that they're wondering where America is, too. But not in any great detail, no.
What would he do in Latin America?
Beats me.
We have a segment coming up on that in our 30 Issues in 30 Days series next week. So maybe we'll get an answer by then. But Fred Kaplan writes the War Stories column for Slate. He also has a forthcoming book in a couple of months, The Insurgents, David Petraeus and the Plot to Change the American Way of War. So we look forward to the book interview once that comes out.
Good.
And Fred, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Some excerpts and thoughts about Romney's foreign policy speech yesterday. Brian Lehrer and WNYC. And coming up next, we turn to the Supreme Court and the case that they're going to hear today, probably hearing it at this moment, about discrimination against white people. The Supreme Court considers whether to overturn its own recent ruling that says colleges may aim for a diverse student body. Stay tuned.